to welcome everyone to Yeshiva University, to the Kol Yom Rishon program, to the Abraham Arbisfeld Kol Yom Rishon and Millie Arbisfeld Midreshet Yom Rishon. This is our final Kol LeMidreshet Yom Rishon program for this season. So it is with great anticipation that we really have a wonderful program this morning. We do want to begin by acknowledging the presence of High Arbisfeld, Rabbi Arbisfeld, whose vision and support for the program and many, many others here at Yeshiva continue to inspire our students and our broader Jewish community. Recently, over Pesach, we commemorated the Yahrzeit of Rav Soloveitchik. And there is no question that his continued influence and impact is felt and experienced in so many aspects of our community each and every day. One of the institutions that has been most instrumental in publishing and disseminating the Torah of the Rav over the past number of years is the OU Press, the Orthodox Union Press. In particular, the publication of the Chumashim that include the Rav's insights on the Parshios of Chumash have brought reflection and inspiration to so many people. Today's tribute to Rabbi Soloveitchik Zatzal is a joint program between the Center for the Jewish Future, REITZ, and the OU Press, and it is in celebration of the release of the latest volume in this series, and that is for Sefer Vayikra. And we would like to acknowledge who is with us this morning, Steve Neuwirth, whose family serves as a benefactor of the Rav's Chumash Project. And we are deeply grateful to Rabbi Ganak and the entire OU Press team for their partnership in putting together today's program. Today we'll have the opportunity to hear from the following esteemed speakers. Rabbi Julie Berman, who is a close Talmud of the Rav, a YU and REITZ trustee, and a chairman of the OU Press, will be delivering introductory remarks. After Rabbi Berman's words, Rav Herschel Schachter, Shlita, the Rosh Kolel, and Rosh Yeshiva at REITZ, will deliver a shiur on Torah and insights from the Rav. In addition, we'll have the opportunity to hear personal stories and reflections from Talmidim and Shamasim of the Rav, Rabbi Louis Winokur, who teaches at Hafter and serves as a Rav of the Woodrow Minyan, and Rabbi Kenneth Brander, the Vice President of University and Community Life here at Yeshiva University. After this, Dr. Arnold Lustiger, who is the editor of the Chumash Mesoras HaRav Vayikra, will present a video of the Rav himself and provide some insights and reflections regarding the Rav's Torah and his influence in our community. Finally, Rabbi Menachem Ganak, the Rosh Yeshiva at REITZ and the CEO of OU Kosher, will be closing with a special shiur on Inyanei Tefillah. The shiurim this morning are sponsored by Bella Hochberg, Le'ilui Nishmas, her husband, Mordechai Yitzchak ben Shmuel v'Fegi Pesha. I would like to thank Rabbi Aryeh Charka for all of his hard work in putting today's program together. And I would like to thank all of you, the community that comes out each and every Sunday to learn together, to grow together. It is really an extraordinary experience to be able to share the Torah of YU in our Kolel Yom Rishon, in our Midreshet Yom Rishon. We look forward to continuing our learning together next year as the new season begins. Thank you so much. And please give your attention to
Rishus Rav Shechter, Rishus Rosh Yeshiva, Morev Rabbeisai. Now you can hear me? There are various customs surrounding the timing of setting up and unveiling the matseva over a grave. In Yerushalayim, the custom is to set the monument immediately after Shiva. In many other places, the custom is to wait until the period of the first Yahrzeit. Rabbi Akiva Eiger explained the latter custom by pointing out that there is a generally accepted psychological phenomenon that the memory of a departed one fades after 12 months, so the monument is not needed as a remembrance until that point in time. From time to time, the Rav Zatzal would point out during his annual Yahrzeit lecture for his father, Rav Moshe Zatzal, that contrary to this psychological principle, as the years have gone by, His longing for his father has not diminished. Indeed, it has increased. What he would have given, said the Rav, to have 15 more minutes with his father to discuss some of the critical issues facing him. What we would give to have 15 minutes with the Rav, Moreinu Rabbeinu Zatzal, to discuss and receive guidance on these so many new issues that constantly crop up and are continuing to bedevil us. But all we have are our memories. Today, we reflect our desire and commitment to hold on to those memories, sharing them with those who are not privileged to learn with the Rav directly, reminding those of us whose lives were directly shaped by him of our debt and gratitude. It is fitting that we hold this event at our yeshiva, Yeshivas Rabbeinu Yisroel Chanan, where we experience what may be the most moving event, indeed a spiritual experience of the academic year. And that was the annual Yahrzeit Shir presented by the Rav on the day of the Yahrzeit of his father, Rav Moshe Zatzal, on Gimel Shvat. I cannot help but feel a wave of nostalgia envelop me as we look back to those days and years almost a lifetime ago. When the Rav, in the course of the Shir, said, "Ich hab gehört von Vater, in Nomen von Zede," I heard from my father in the name of my grandfather, it loses so much of its emotional impact in translation. We were figuratively transported back to Chaslovich, where the Rav was brought up, and from there to Brisk of Reb Chaim, and from there to Volozhin, the Mama Yeshiva of the Nesiv and Reb Chaim. The Rav personified Torah Sheba'al Peh, its vitality and dynamism, its intellectual excitement and spiritual depth. He embodied Mesorah. To us, the Rav was the noble messenger of Hashem, whose entire being was a testament to the transmission, preservation, and perpetuation of the Torah. He would say that when giving the shir, he felt that Hillel and Shammai, Abaye and Rava, Rashi and Tosfos, the Taz and the Shach, and on, were present in the room as he explicated the Gemara. And the Rav inspired and encouraged the students to join him in this fellowship of learning. While we recognize that we can never attain the level of understanding, of comprehension, indeed of the spiritual experience of sitting at the Rav's feet, drinking in his Torah, receiving his far-seeing guidance on the critical issues facing the Jew in modern society, we will now embark together on a journey as we reminisce about the manner in which he taught us both the Torah and the way of life of B'nai Torah. As you heard before, this event is especially meaningful because it comes on the marking of the publication of the Orthodox Union Press that I have the honor to chair, of the third volume of a unique set of Svarim, a multi-volume set of the Chumash Mesoras HaRav, containing the Rav's commentary on the Torah, compiled and edited by Arnold Lustiger, from whom you will be hearing a bit later in the program. A special Yasher Koyach, as you've heard, is extended to Stephen and Natalie Neuwirth for their generosity in sponsoring the Mesoras HaRav series. However, before I relinquish the podium, to Rav Herschel Schachter Shlita to present the shiur, I just want to share with you a few incidents in the Rav's life that reflect in a small way this multifaceted personality. I look around here and I try to figure the age of the people around this room, to what extent they had met the Rav, to what extent they were living when the Rav lived. And it goes without saying, as the years go by, newer people are coming aboard to find out more about the Rav, who they had heard about but never seen. It was in the early summer, more specifically, in Kessel Osser, 1982. I recall the date very specifically, because in June of that year, I was elected as chairman of the Conference of Presidents of Major American Jewish Organizations. And 3 days later, no relationship to my election, General Arik Sharon led the Israeli troops into Lebanon in a successful effort to discontinue the bombardment from Lebanon south into Israel. Following a summer campaign, the incident involving the massacre of Sabra and Shatila refugee camps occurred, in which Christian Lebanese soldiers invaded the Muslim-occupied camps, leaving many Muslim dead. The entire world erupted, condemning Israel for allegedly conspiring with the Christians. As the Prime Minister Menachem Begin summed it up, Goyim hagen in Goyim und schuldig sein in die Eden. Classic anti-Semitism. A major controversy erupted in Israel as to whether Begin should convene a judicial commission to independently investigate the incident. And now the story involving the Rav. I received a telephone call, as I say, in Kessel Osser, 1982. The Rav was on the phone, and he started the conversation. What is this magazine, Olam Hazeh? I knew a little about the magazine, which I don't think exists anymore. I said, Rebbe, it's basically a rag. It's really not for your attention. Why do you ask? His response, I want to sue them for libel. Now, the lawyers, or those who deal with lawyers in this room and otherwise, will know that the last thing in the world you do is sue a rag for libel. They usually demuch at you for 3-4 years, and then they go bankrupt. Doesn't do you any good. So I realized I had a job to do. I said, Rebbe, what's the problem? So he says, I just received a call from Israel, and I was informed that this magazine, Olam Hazeh, published a story to the effect that I was so exercised about Begin's reluctance in convening a judicial commission that I called him on Yom Kippur. So what do I do? So I said, Rebbe, let me give you a quick little primer on law of libel. It has to be an alleged fact. It has to be false. It has to be to your damage. But it has to be something that is believable. I paused, and I said, Rebbe, I can see the possibility of people believing that you were so upset that you called on Yom Kippur. But nobody would believe that Menachem Begin would answer the phone. He laughed also, and I realized I was successful. But the Rav is the Rav. He always had the last word. Yeah, but over there it's 7 hours later. I was with the Rav Cholamei Sukkis in Brookline. And this is just a minor incident that reflects the type of person the Rav was, who many, of course, that were in Ashir thought of him as the hard taskmaster, the person who, if you weren't prepared, he let you have it, etc. We're talking, and his daughter comes in, and she says, there's a call from so-and-so in such-and-such a country on the phone. The Rav excuses himself, but before he does so, he tells me what that was. It was about this person had just become engaged to a daughter of a Rosh Yeshiva, and I'm sure he's calling me to inform him of that fact, and to get Mazel Tov. Well, sure enough, he went over to the phone. Remember, I'm hearing only one side of it. So I hear the following. Mo'adim l'simcha. Yeah? No. Really? To whom? Oh, that's wonderful. I don't know her, but her father is a guy in a big Rosh Yeshiva. And on and on. When the phone call was over, he comes back to the room. And as he's sitting down, I said, Rebbe, I felt close enough so I could say that. Rebbe, what's the charade? You knew before you got on the phone who it was, and you knew what he was going to say. Why did you sound so surprised? The Rav being the Rav, he says, it took me 5 seconds to realize the hanor he was having about informing me about the situation. How could I deprive him of feeling that he was the first to let me know that of the shidduch? So that was the Rav. Of course, the reason he knew it is because the Kala's father called him even before. And then finally, one final vault, and that's basically it. It's not just a vault. You know, to tell you that Yeshiva University goes for financial crises, unfortunately, is not something new anymore. So to tell you that this story goes back to the 70s, it was in the 70s, during our time, that the first crisis, as I knew of it, really occurred, and the Yeshiva was going through quite a bit in terms of, can they continue? Will we continue? How will we continue? What will we cut down? What will we cut out? And everybody was watching and listening, waiting for the ultimate word. There was a small meeting in the office of the chairman of the board at that time, Herbert Tenzer. I believe, but I'm not sure, that Max Stern, Oliver Shalom, Ludwig Jesselson, unfortunately, almost everyone is Oliver Shalom, were there. And of course, Yibodeh L'chaim, Dr. Lamb was there too. And they're discussing the yes and the no and the how of continuing or not continuing. A knock on the door. The door opens and Herbert Tenzer's secretary walks in with a piece of paper, hands the paper to her boss. He reads it. Tenzer then gives it to Dr. Lamb. Lamb reads it, and he says, send them in. And the door opens, and in comes the Rav, uninvited. And he sits down, and of course he's given the floor. And the Rav says the following. He says, it's interesting that in Sefer Bereishis, the creation of the world, we have a detailed recitation of every day what was created on that day. And it's interesting that with respect to the creation, on every day other than the second day, it says, Vayar Elokim Kitov. Vayar Elokim Kitov. And then finally at the end, Vayar Elokim Eis Kol Asher Asah V'Neito Mod. So the Rebbe says, think of it for a moment. Who is the creator? The creator is God, Kabiyachol. What do you expect him to say? Vayar Elokim, I goofed? It made no sense. Of course, if God does it, whether you understand it or not, it was good. Whatever it was good. Why bother repeating again and again, Vayar Elokim Kitov? And then the Rav immediately switched to an answer. He says, we have a tendency in Yadus, and an appropriate one. Whenever we look back, we look at our faults. You can't do tshuva unless you have akaras hachet. You can't do akaras hachet unless you recognize what you did wrong and what you can do to do better. But, says the Rav, once in a while, Vayar Elokim Kitov, you can look back and talk about what good you did also. And then he launched a personal, not confession, a personal recitation of what Yeshiva has meant to him over the years, of how because of Yeshiva, he was able to develop his own Torah, create a core of larger and larger of students and students of students, of people to whom he can deliver that Torah, to whom he can relate to in terms of hadracha, of life, of how to relate to life. And for that, it's not a question of al chait, it's a question of akaras hatov. He says, that was what yeshiva meant to me. In terms of you, and then referring to the people around that table, and in a sense referring to all of us here and beyond, we also have to have akaras hatov. We have to have akaras hatov for having had, on a very unique level, the ability to relate to the Rav Zatzal, and to learn from him, and to sit at his feet, and have the hadracha that only the Rav could give us. And it was, we sit around here today, and we think, Eis Asher Yeshnupo, Eis Asher Nenupo. We are resolved to continue both the learning the Torah of the Rav, and following the hadracha, his hadracha, Lagdil Torah L'Adira, Abiyas Golotzion. Thank you.